Welcome to 4.0 to Pro, the pickleball podcast that focuses on a single shot, tip, or strategy to improve your pickleball game with every single pocket-sized episode. Our goal is to make you better on the court every time you hear our voices. And now your hosts, 4.something Michael O'Neill, and USA Pickleball National Silver Medalist, Senior Pro Scott Fliegelman.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of 4.0 to Pro, your pocket-sized pickleball podcast, where we teach you a single shot or strategy every single episode. I'm Michael O'Neill here in sunny Long Beach, California, joined by my bundled-up co-host, Scott Fliegelman, in Boulder, Colorado. Hello, Scott. Is it cold there in Boulder?
Hello, Michael. We've got our first glimpse of the actual winter season, 4 or 5 inches of snow on the ground.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the crazy things about living in Colorado, which I did for 15 years, is that you can get 20 inches of snow on Monday, and Wednesday, it's dry and sunny and 55 degrees. Now, we are going to do something that you mentioned a couple weeks ago. I was in Arizona for the NPL finals, and that is essentially the MLP for the 50-year-old plus player. And it was the finals weekend. And by the by, and for those of you who don't know this, our esteemed co-host, Scott Fliegelman, had the highest number of wins of any male in the league. So congratulations, man. That's awesome.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, I didn't think I would be able to play all 6 events and then every match in all of the events. So it helped to be able to play all of them. There were only 2 of us that played all 40 matches. I got 27 wins with 6 different partners. I'm super proud of that. As I've mentioned on this show, I've not had the chance to practice as much in between, but really relish the opportunity to be on court with my partners. I'm a little bit of an indoor snob these days, so it helps. we played indoors, but I'm going to have to change that because we've got nationals coming up November 6th in Dallas, and I've got 4 partners expecting me to have my A outdoor game.
Right. So what I would love for you to do is you described something to me that weekend that, you know me, I love a good A-B choice on the court, or an A-A choice if this is the only shot to hit. Mm-hmm. But I love the idea of I should either do this or this, and it removes the confusion out of the game, makes you play faster, makes the game slow down a little bit. Can you explain to me what you came up with in terms of how to determine drive or drop, like just as a overall concept?
Yeah, it's really helpful to be able to determine drop or drive as much in advance as possible. I think we'll get into some of the additional details, but I've boiled it down to we can't watch both the returner's ball and the returner equally well. So we really need to watch the ball and have the returner in our peripheral vision. And what I've learned to boil it down a little bit is to replicate the trajectory of the return of serve when it comes to our third. So essentially, if they've hit a low and fast return of serve, I'm going to hit a low and fast-ish third shot back at their feet because I can gamble their low fast return did not allow them quite enough time to make it all the way to the non-volley zone. If they hit a lofted return, they've bought themselves some more time, I can gamble they've made it all the way to the non-volley zone. I need to match their trajectory, that lofted trajectory, with a traditional third shot drop because that ball is going to likely need to land in the kitchen.
Well, let's set this up, you know, pre-serve. Let's talk about, we've talked a lot about pre-serve alignment on this show, which is, you mentioned something on a very early episode where it's like, watch a set of pro doubles players play, and you'll find that they won't hit a third from their non-preferred wing the entire tournament. If they want to hit forehand thirds, they'll hit a forehand third every time. And they do that because they align themselves in the box as they serve. So in this case, the very first thing we can do to set ourselves up for success is align ourselves to make sure that we hit the third, whether it's our forehand or our backhand, because some people have these lovely slice, you know, drop backhands that are fantastic for thirds. And that's what they want to set up. So they might align themselves a little bit right in the box if they're on the right-hand side, ensuring that they get a backhand to hit that third. I kind of feel like Riley Newman's like that a little bit. It almost feels like he prefers a backhand third versus a forehand, but I could be wrong.
You're right. And also Matt Wright, ironically enough, has a lovely backhand slice third shot drop and prefers that shot. Let me add a little bit of texture to what we are talking about here is I like to pre-serve a line. I'm right-handed. I like my forehand. So I push to the far left of my assigned area, and I like my partner to do the same. But I'm also strongly recommending all the time, and especially for this concept, that we also back up. You and I have talked about adjusting our vertical alignment as servers toward or away from the baseline. I like the server and the server's partner to be back so that we can assure some forward movement as we get ready to hit our third, whether that be a drop or a drive.
Right. The other thing I think we should talk about in general is, what are your chops like? I mentioned this about a tournament that I played, I don't know, 6 weeks ago or so. For whatever reason, that particular day, my drive was laser targeted and virtually unstoppable. I could put it wherever I wanted. I wasn't making any mistakes. It was staying in the court, and I was in the flow with that drive. So on that particular day, I was looking to drive, and I was looking to take that third shot drive and then fifth shot drop. Again, AB. It was like, this is the shot I'm hitting, and then this is definitely the shot I'm following it up with, should I get that fourth. So I think that can factor in. As we move up in level, we have to start watching the body language and the footwork of our opponents. And this is the same for every sport, but I think certainly in pickleball, how quickly can they move on court? What is it looking like? If you see someone doing that, like you said, a nice lofty third, maybe that's because they can't get up to the line as quickly as other people might. And so that might affect how you respond to that, right?
Absolutely. As I'm trying to make this decision on the fly, improve my processor speed, I want to get as many clues as possible to help me make the decision. And part of those clues, starting with warmups, is how well do my opponents move? What's their footwork like? How agile are they? And depending upon that answer, that's going to incline me to either drive the third, keeping in mind that when I suggest a drive, it's just like you mentioned, it's not for the purpose of blowing that ball by them. This is the Florida Pro Show. That fourth shot's coming back. It's to get a shorter fourth ball, a shorter opportunity to drop the fifth. That's the purpose of my drive. And again, I'm trying to aim for their feet in the transition area. And if I've determined that they're not the swiftest and their footwork's not that crisp, I'm going to be more inclined to go with a new school third approach of catching them before they've made it to the non-volley zone.
Right. Let's play a scenario out here. We're serving and you've hit a perfect serve. You've hit a beautifully deep serve right near the baseline. You've effectively slowed down their ability to come into the net. And or maybe they've hit a shorter ball mid-transition zone versus burying you back by the baseline. What sort of choice are you making at that point?
So this is something you and I have talked about before, Michael, and you and I have had different approaches to this, although, you know, I think you're adjusting in this area. Most players, when they're faced with the short-ish return, are inclined to drive. And the objective of that drive is to, like you like to say, hit the field goal or maybe hit a clean winner. And that's not a terrible idea, but I do think that is also a really good opportunity to consider percentage pickleball. And the percentage play there is to take that short return. We know that they've not made it all the way into the non-volley zone yet because they didn't hit a deep lofted return. Hit that ball at the feet of the returner. We're going to get a pop-up or they're going to drop it into the kitchen and we're going to game on for a four-person ritual kitchen exchange, which needs to be plan A for the servers, not necessarily go from defense to offense because the percentage of success with that drive is not as high as dropping the ball at their feet.
So this is one of those perfect occasions for that new school third because they're in transition. They're coming up. You can put it at their feet. What I would worry about here is if they were already back and you have an opportunity to keep them back, does it make sense to drop it there and give them the excuse to come up? Or if we have the chops, do we still try to go at their feet? You know what I'm saying by this?
I know what you're saying, but I feel like at 4-0 to pro, that returner is not staying back. I mean, I feel like they're coming in regardless.
Yeah.
But we've got a guideline that we offer on this show, which is hit the ball at their feet, wherever the heck their feet are.
Right.
So if they happen to stay back or they're in the midcourt, let's hit it there. I do see people trying to hit drop shots into the kitchen when the returner is only halfway in. And I'm like, well, why did we do that? It was a risky shot and it brought them in even further. If we've got their feet in the transition area, hit the ball at their feet,
right,
wherever the heck they may happen to be.
And I've seen this a ton lately for some reason. If they're stacking and that person has to go diagonally across the court just to get to the line, we've got that open space right there. What's interesting too, if we did this show 8 months ago, some of the answers might be slightly different. And the reason why is because we've talked about the technology of these paddles and how much spin you can now get on the ball versus even a year ago. There are people that are coming from tennis that are hitting these like in-court topspin drives from closer than we would have advised a year ago. Agree or disagree?
Agree.
So if somebody's unwinding the stack and you have a chance to hit the open space with a drive, or you can hit a drop, which might have a lot of space between it because they have to a bunch of ground that they have to cover. Is that one of those things where you sort of stick to the percentage, or do you maybe lean on trying to keep them back or trying to end the point at that juncture?
I'm sticking with my new school third, which is always my plan A. And if I know that, or if I sense that they're unwinding the stack, meaning that the returner has to book it cross court, I'm even more inclined to use some topspin, hit a 60% forehand topspin drive at their feet. They're on the move, they're on the diagonal. It's a tough ball to handle as opposed to trying to drop it into the kitchen when I just don't need to take that risk because that ball could hit the net or pop up a little bit. So I'm always looking to hit a conservative line drive at the feet of the returner when they're unwinding the stack.
Okay. Well, let's get into really what the essence of this is and your idea here. Let's dig a little deeper into the trajectory of their return, because this is really the AB. We've got enough things to think about in terms of like where to position ourselves on the court and how to play with our teammates and blah, blah, blah. I love to simplify things. So I've served, they've now returned, and they've actually hit a nice return high, deep, and down the middle, just like we've prescribed for many shows. And by the way, split step, you guys. And it's effectively a great return. High, deep, down the middle, it's near the baseline. What's my third going to be?
So let's say I'm your partner. It's you or me. Either one of us is going to hit this third. And my inclination is to have read the clues. They've got some decent mobility. And you just gave me all I needed to know is they hit it high and deep, meaning that's all the time they needed to jog to the non-volley zone. The new school third now is less effective. There's nobody's feet in transition to get the ball to. I am very likely to jump to a traditional third shot drop with both of them standing up at the non-volley zone. I'm going to go with the geometric benefits of the cross-court shot. So as soon as I see the lofted return, I am hitting a lofted traditional third shot drop cross-court.
No matter, so if you're on the right side, you're going left. If you're on the left side, you're going right.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Simple.
Okay. I've now served, and they've, because everyone thinks SportsCenter is watching at all times, they've ripped a forehand topspin return that allows both of us to take a step or two inside the baseline. The ball is probably knee high. What's my shot there?
Again, I'm reading the clues. Whether they're highly mobile or not, they haven't bought themselves enough time to comfortably make it to the non-volley zone. This is so frequently the case with tennis players of all levels. They prefer the aesthetic beauty of the low line drive return of serve. That's what the tennis brain tells them to do. There are some players that get nervous when they see the low fast return. I've had to ask them to reframe that to, let's gamble that by them hitting the low fast return, that there are 12 feet between them and the net when it comes time to hit the third shot. I love that space.
Right.
You know, they haven't bought themselves enough time. So I'm going to replicate the trajectory. If they hit that low topspin ground stroke, I'm going to hit them a low topspin ground stroke right back. I don't have to watch them. I just have to watch the ball. And I can gamble fairly accurately that I've got lots of space to get that ball at their feet or even their knees. Anything they need to hit up was a successful third shot from us, and we can begin moving forward from there.
So the big lesson here is, let's say maybe it's a tweener. Maybe they've hit a mid-speed drive and it's almost to the baseline, but it's a fairly decent return. The important thing to think about is if they are at the non-volley zone and they are planted, they're ready for the volley return. If you hit a drive, you're going to drop that ball almost every single time.
Correct. But the clock is running in my head. And I feel like since you mentioned the in-between line drive and lofted ball, I'm going to do everything I can to get on that ball as soon as possible. I'm going to take it on the rise. I'm going to get that ball back to them as quickly as possible. Because frequently, I can still get the response that I'm looking for out of their fourth shot by hitting the ball at the returner who has just arrived at the non-volley zone. Their feet aren't planted. They're not nearly as composed as their partner. And I'm just looking for a mid-court fourth ball out of them in order to drop the fifth. Sure, it'd be nice to get a pop-up and do a little shake and bake out of it, but I'm always willing to settle for having achieved neutrality in the rally as the servers. And our goal is to just make it up to the non-volley zone to play some kitchen ball.
So we've got some exceptions to this. On certain days, it could be really windy, which is obviously really unpredictable. The ball's not going to go exactly where we want it to. You could have a wind behind you, so they might be hitting like this lovely deep return that ends up bouncing midway through the transition zone and 3 feet up and not have enough time to do anything with. But those kinds of days have problems for each side. It's not just the side that's hitting it. Sometimes when the wind's at your back, you hit a bunch of balls long. That could affect whether you drive or not, if the ball is going to go long. Or as I mentioned before, you could just be having an off day. I've had days where I feel like it's my first day playing pickleball and I've never dropped a ball in my life and I can't seem to get anything going. Every ball's sailing too high. And again, if my partner and I aren't completely in sync, my partner gets shellacked by this ball that's too high or I'm drilling it into the net. We have a set of courts here that my first 3 years of playing pickleball, there's a perfect diagonal wind that is against the player that's on the left-hand side. So when you go to hit that right side drop, the diagonal drop onto that right side, man, that wind just pushes it down and hits you right into the net. And it's really hard to find the perfect spot for that particular drop. If I'm on that side, on that particular court, I'm more likely to do a third drive of some sort, whether it's a new school or I try to, you know, do something dumb or kick a field goal kind of deal. So I'm definitely more likely to drive or at least hit some sort of mid drive to just try to get out of that spot because it's almost impossible to drop from there.
Yeah. And when I think of exceptions, it's usually coming up with the list that you've already mentioned for occasions when a drop shot is just not prudent. And in this case, like when they hit a super deep return and I'm 26 feet away from my opponent's non-volley zone, that's a tough shot to drop that ball in there. If they've added a bunch of spin to their return, it's a windy day, just like you said, the correct shot based on the trajectory of their return might be to drop because yes, they've made it all the way to the non-volley zone, but my percentages of success with a drop shot are low enough that I'm going to override that with what I consider to be a conservative line drive. Feed them a volley, make them volley, and take my chances on the fifth shot, as opposed to banging my head against the wall, trying to hit the right shot, a drop shot that hits the net, or I pop it up because there's too much spin or there's too much wind or I'm having an off day. Like you said, I would much rather just feed them a line drive and live for another shot in the rally.
So this is going to be a little bonus tip. I'm surprising you with this, so take your time to answer it. On the occasion where you are facing a returner, especially those that came from tennis, and they have a wicked backhand slice return, which I've seen a number of times, enough that against certain people, I only serve to their forehand because their backhand slice is so hard to deal with that I just don't want to face it anymore. What is that shot? Is it topspin? Because if I try to hit it flat, I feel like it goes everywhere. Like, what's the strategy around hitting someone who's got a fantastic slice return?
Fortunately, it's the same answer, but that's a really good illustrative point, is that slice return is not the time to try to drop that ball into the kitchen. Good for them for hitting that shot. My mindset is absolutely the same. Make them hit a fourth ball. Give them a chest high volley. Yeah,
whatever you can.
Good for great job on that slice return. Guess what? Their fourth shot volley is not going to be as impactful as their second shot slice return. That was the impactful shot. Their fourth shot volley is not going to impact me as much. Then I'll drop, or new school, I'm likely to drop my fifth off of their fourth shot volley. But if I try to do too much against that slice return, that's when I make mistakes.
Well, so if they hit that though, if I'm hitting a third, what's my best shot choice? Not location wise, but actual physical shot. Am I hitting topspin? Am I trying to counter their slice? Like, what do I do against their slice? You know what I'm saying?
Topspin ground stroke is great. They've given us the pre-spin. It's already rotating the way I want it to be to add topspin. So now the RPMs coming off my paddle are going to be greater than I thought they would be because of the pre-spin on the ball. They've already got it rotating in their direction. So I need to aim higher.
But I was going to say, you need a little more loft on it so you don't just drill it. Yeah, right into the net. Yeah, exactly.
It's the same stroke. It's just let's pick a target 12 to 16 inches higher than we normally would without the pre-spin that they've provided us.
Well, Scott, I really love this as an innovation in pickleball, this idea that you can basically mirror the return of serve with your third, whatever they're doing. High lofty return, high lofty third. Low drive return, low drive third. And it takes the guesswork out, again, anything to slow the game down and let you focus on other things that are important, like balance, location on court, et cetera, et cetera.
I think this is a good game plan for most occasions. I've been using it myself for a while. I've been teaching it for 5-6 weeks or so and wanted to get it out to our audience as soon as we felt it was baked and ready. So I'm anxious to hear how this goes for our listeners.
Yeah, guys, especially try this. Go out in the world, try this a little bit. Let us know how it goes, as this is a relatively new concept out in the world. And write to us on Instagram, 4.0 to Pro. On Instagram, you can also write us at picklehelp.com if you have any questions about your pickleball game, you want us to answer a few. And if you want to start sending a few questions in, we'll do another Q&A show very, very soon. For Scott, I'm Michael here. You guys have a wonderful day. Enjoy the courts. We'll talk to you next time.
Thank you for listening to 4.0 to Pro. For more tips, find us on Instagram at 4.0 to Pro. If you have a pickleball question, submit it at picklehelp.com. Now, get out there and dominate. But don't forget to have fun.